on the line, Bert from the Cuban Friendship Society, and we're going to be here talking, having a discussion with him about the legacy of Fidel Castro in light of his death last Saturday. Good morning, Bert.
G'day, Jacob.
Hi.
And Lalitha here, Berk.
Hi. I guess,
hi.
I guess the first question is, what is the legacy of Fidel Castro, and you know what has he meant, for the Cuban Freedom? This is a very probably a big loaded question.
Big story.
Big story to go, and we can start from there.
Yeah. Look. I guess there's just been so much. I mean, Fidel once said, "A better world is possible." And this is said by someone who has lived dreaming and more than once has had the rare privilege of seeing dreams become realities.
That's right.
That were not even dreamt of. Mm. And clearly, if you look at the situation where they've had a blockade for nearly 60 years, Cuba under Fidel and the rest of the leadership has transformed itself from poverty and underdevelopment. And despite numerous hurricanes and the US blockade against Cuba, into an example for the rest of the world.
I know. I mean, what amazes me is he survived 638 attempts by the CIA to kill him. And that says, that's a statement of the century as far as I'm concerned. Because, you know, why would the US want to kill somebody that many times?
Well, clearly, the problem for the US is that here's an alternative to the capitalist society just 90 miles off their Florida coast. And when you consider that the huge achievements made, the highest rate of literacy in Latin America, the lowest infant mortality rate than most parts of the United States, more teachers and doctors per capita than any other country, a country that doesn't have homelessness, a successful multiracial society, and we see what's going on in the US at the moment with the Black Lives Matter movement, a leader in organic food production because they were really impacted by the blockade, and I was there in 1990 and 1993, and they really got into the organic food production, a model of participatory democracy. I mean, if you look at the number of people that vote in Cuba, it's in the 90% range, where if you look at the US, I'm not sure what the last figures were, but it was lucky to be half of the population.
It's less than 50%.
That's right. I think it was something like that. And it's the world's only sustainable economy, is recognised by the World Wildlife Fund. So the problem for the US and the ruling class over there is that it provides an alternative society, socialist society, to what they've got. They push a line that the only form of society that is appropriate is capitalism. And so that's a big factor, and they had to try and get rid of Fidel in that process.
I'm going to be the devil's advocate here and ask you something which I guess a lot of conservative reporters ask, and I think we should flush it out here as well. He's labelled a dictator, and you know, and the fact that he handed power over to his brother Raul Castro certainly provokes these questions from this conservative mob. How do you explain that?
Well, I mean, the situation is the parliamentary system over there is much more democratic than ours. For example, any politician that is elected to their parliament, including both Fidel and Raul, they had the power of recall. They could be recalled by their constituents at any time, and geez, in this country, in Australia, that's something we'd...
If only we could.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem, you know. They get in there and then, you know, they promise all these sorts of things and then they sort of go over to the dark side. So, look, I guess that's the only way I can answer it. Look, and, you know, keep in mind that Raul was there right at the beginning. He came over, he was part of the attack on the Moncada Barracks on July 26th. He was there with the grandma when they came back and had the successful revolution. Raul has earned his stripes. He has been the leader of the army for such a long time. He's not someone who's come out of the woodwork. So clearly that, you know, we're very confident that there'll be an ongoing continuation of the really good program that has been achieved under Fidel.
Well, one of the things about that is it's interesting, you know, there were, at sort of Fidel Castro's funeral, there was like millions and upon millions of Cubans or, you know, crying and, you know, expressing their grieving and their sadness at the passing of the leader. And, you know, it kind of shows what that demonstrates to me is that the majority of the Cuban people had their full confidence in Fidel, and, you know, puts sort of like, you know, a dent in this sort of myth that Fidel was this dictator, because, you know, if he really, you know, if they do, it's entrenched in their constitution that they have the right to overthrow their leaders, you know, through armed revolution, whatever you call it. And because, you know, Fidel really didn't have the full confidence of the Cuban people, he could have been overthrown years ago and much sooner. And of course, one of the other one other criticism that's also put forward is the fact that, you know, Cuba is in theory a one-party state. But of course, you have to question what are the alternative parties. Almost every alternative party that would have cropped up in Cuba would have been a pro-capitalist that would have been backed by the United States business. And clearly, the Cuban people are in full support. Have their full confidence in the current party, ruling party that is ruling Cuba.
Yeah, look, I think that's a really good point. Like, if I can illustrate it, in 1990, I was a Telstra technician who'd never travelled overseas before, and my union received an invitation from the Cuban Trade Union Congress, the CTC, to attend their May Day march in Havana. And another member, Gary Kennedy, who later became the secretary of the Newcastle Trades and Labour Council, represented the Communication Workers Union at May Day. Now, millions marched on May Day in Cuba, and we were blown away by the huge crowds in Revolutionary Square.
And that would have been the 1st of May, yes?
That's correct, yes, yes.
I just wanted to make that point.
Fidel marched with the CTC leader, Pedro Ross, the then CTC leader, at the head of the march. It was a trade union thing, as you know. The history of May Day is the struggle for the 80-hour day.
Mm, that's right.
And we saw how Fidel was able to march freely at the head of the people. There was no guards around him. Mm. The people loved him. And, you know, contrast this to, say, the US president. I think he does a walk down Pennsylvania's promenade or something like that.
Yes.
And he's surrounded by guards and you know,
CIA and the lot.
You know, and I mean, the situation is, we could see that if people didn't like him, they could have ripped him apart before the guards got to him.
Exactly.
But, people stopped. And then he came up on the dais where we were, and as the march continued, because as I said, there were millions marching, it started to block up as it got in front of him, because they're all waving to him. And you're absolutely correct. In the you know, the footage we've seen in the last couple of days of people crying and you know, out in large numbers. I mean, I expect the CIA and ASIO and all these folk to be saying, you know, oh, look, they're there at gunpoint and they don't really want to be there and
of
all
course.
That. But there's no question about it. When you look at the history of Cuba, where it was dominated by the United States, a very poor country, people couldn't read and write, the mafia had a massive impact in there. Fidel and the Communist Party changed all that.
I think one of the key things about Cuba is the health system, and that is so impressive. It has one of the best health systems in the world. And I listened to Che Guevara's daughter who came out here, who's a pediatrician.
Yes, yes.
And she was so impressive at the rate of immunization and the amount of health improvements in the society. In fact, they even have a vaccination against lung cancer. And the world refuses to acknowledge it because of this imperialist view of Cuba as offering an alternative to capitalism, as you say. It is just appalling what they will do to suppress anything that benefits humanity for the sake of profits. Ugh, it drives me insane.
No, you're absolutely right. And in fact, it's interesting you raised Aida Guevara, because she's a paediatrician herself.
That's right.
She's a children's doctor,
yep.
you would know.
Yep.
But Cuba has free health care for everyone.
That's right.
And the highest doctor-patient ratio in the world.
Yep.
Its medical brigades have sent around about 40,000 doctors to work in 81 developing countries.
Mm.
You know, they do some wonderful stuff, and there's been great breakthroughs on a whole range of issues. You're quite right about the vaccine for various, not only the ones you mentioned, but all sorts of things.
Yes.
So, you know, they've done it off their own bat. And if you look at the cost of Cuban healthcare versus the US healthcare, the US healthcare costs per capita, that's why the only way you can compare them, five times as much as what the Cuban healthcare costs.
Mm.
And the reason is it's privately operated for profit. That's the big difference.
Yes.
Yeah, I think one thing I'd like to, you know, discuss, you know, in relation to the legacy of Fidel Castro is, you know, the examples of international solidarity he has, you know, shown to oppressed groups, you know, from you know, the support that he gave to Africans against resisting against apartheid, you know, to the solidarity. There was even a recent example. I think there was a big, you know, remember when the Ebola outbreak and Cuba had sent in doctors into support. And there's also, they give solidarity, you know, to the most oppressed people in Australia with, you know, the Indigenous Literacy Project that Cuban teachers are involved in. So, yeah, let's discuss more about the kind of examples of international solidarity that Fidel Castro has shown over the years.
Yes, look, he certainly armed the Cuban people with internationalism, solidarity, unity, and an iron will to defend their independence and sovereignty. So when Africa called Cuba, they answered and helped defeat the scourge of apartheid. And one of the first places that Nelson Mandela visited when he got out was Cuba.
That's right.
And when he was having his inauguration of as president of South Africa, the US put enormous pressure on Nelson Mandela and the South African government to not invite Fidel. And anyway, the South African government, and they said, look, we won't come if Fidel comes. And so the South African says, well, you're not coming then. Don't come, okay? And it's because of that wonderful, you know, support that the Cubans had given in Angola and other places in South Africa. And interesting, Jacob, you mentioned the situation with literacy. They've been all around the world helping people to learn and read and write. And you're aware of what's happening here in Australia, particularly in rural New South Wales, places like Wilcannia, where they're teaching our Indigenous brothers and sisters how to read and write.
They've got
a particular system. I mean, and it's working. Even both Conservative and Labor governments have supported it because it does work.
Mm.
So it's this wonderful international attitude that the Cubans and the leadership of the people in Cuba has to support people all around the world. Wherever there's a breakout of Ebola or been an earthquake, and you know, they're there. They're helping with doctors and so forth. It's a tremendous example.
I just have to say that in relation to the Cubans in Australia, it's an absolute disgrace that Australia had to, you know, resort to having Cubans here. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. But the fact remains that the Cubans have an enormous impact on the Aboriginal community here. I went to a international Indigenous conference 2 weeks ago, and Cuba was mentioned at that conference by the leaders of, I think it was Northern Territory, about the literacy program you just mentioned. And I was saying, wow, you know, this is just so impressive. It's a tiny country with such a small number of people can do so much because of the commitment to people. And that's a feature of Fidel Castro. He was completely committed to the people, completely committed to making sure that capitalism doesn't destroy Cuba. He never betrayed the people. That's a feature of this man. And it just, it's mind-blowing to think that he was so committed to the people compared to majority of the other countries in the world where the commitment is to profits.
Absolutely. You know, what a wonderful inspiration for the rest of us, you know.
Absolutely. It's, I can't stop looking at videos and reading things about him, because, you know, if there was a magnificent human being, he was absolutely one. He, I think, surpasses everybody, including Gandhi and the Pope and all these things, even Mother Teresa, they put up on a pedestal. Nothing could match Fidel Castro.
Well, personally, on that note, I don't have a very high opinion of my Mother Teresa. So.
I know.
But I don't either, actually.
it's just the way the bourgeois press promotes them. That's what I'm comparing it to, you know.
You're quite right.
And all they can do is put him down, you know, bring all the negative things into it. Oh, he didn't support gay rights. Well, how do you know? Did you go there? Did you have a look at it? Did you actually talk to people there?
Well, the interesting thing is, on that topic, you know, Cuba, we had to admit, it was admittedly back in that time very homophobic and had quite repressive.
That's right.
But Fidel, you know, Castro has apologized for, you know, I think he apologized back in the 80s or 90s and for those terrible policies towards LGBT. And since then, you know, Cuba has made amazing gains in LGBT rights. In fact, they had a massive march in support of LGBT gay rights. And one of the main kind of sort of organisers behind that is Raul Castro's daughter, who sort of leads.
That's right.
Do you have any more sort of information on that?
No, look, all I can say is you're absolutely right. In the early parts of the revolution, there were difficulties there. And quite frankly, in that part of the Americas, it was a very macho society. And they had to work very, very patiently to bring people around and explain the situation. And it's moved from that earlier situation to a much better situation. But look, it took time. But it was only all that tremendous patient work to change that situation and ensure that they did get the important recognition that they needed.
What's also interesting development in light of Fidel Castro's death is the support that Black Lives Matter has given to Fidel Castro, you know, and his legacy. In fact, they've recently, Black Lives Matter has involved to, you know, to taking up, to not just take up the issues of police brutality, but actually the whole question of economic justice. And they see Fidel Castro as, you know, continue pledging to support that kind of legacy of Fidel Castro of dedication to economic justice and equality for, you know, all oppressed groups. And I think that's a very amazing kind of expression of solidarity when you see what it tells me is, you know, the people who are on the right side of history all stand by Castro, and those who aren't are the ones who are smearing his name and claiming that, you know, he's a dictator who, you know, oppresses his people and so on.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's right. I think that the attacks that have happened, and they've come from some really odd quarters, I must say, but, you know, there's no question that the working class people and the oppressed people have a great love for Fidel, and that will shine through. And as he explained when he was first captured after the July 26th, where they were beaten by Batista's forces, and he stood up in court and gave an heroic speech.
Yes.
And said, "History will absolve me."
Yes.
You know, and his enormous confidence in the struggling masses and their ultimate victory was expressed in that speech, and it inflamed young fighters for justice in Cuba and all over the world, including the Black Lives Matters movement in the United States and the Afro-Americans people there to take up and continue the struggle, and you can't snuff that out with the death of Fidel Castro. It will continue.
I just want to say one last thing. Fidel Castro said that you know, Cuba will not be recognized or wouldn't establish friendly relationships with the US until we have a Latin American Pope and a Black president, and that's what happened. He also said that, "I will not die till the US is destroyed," and we have Donald Trump.
I know. Maybe he never got it all there. But look, the only thing I would say is that I think that capitalism's in its death throes. It's taken a while to get there, but they're in more trouble than Ned Kelly. You know, I mean,
their
economy's in strife. And yeah, and by the way, Ned was a hero, but I mean, Look, they are in strife, and certainly capitalism hasn't gone away. Must acknowledge that.
Yes.
So, but everything he said about the United States is absolutely correct.
Such an astute man, and thank you.
Quick last thing before we have a minute to go. Is the Cuban Friendship Society, from my understanding, are they organising an event on December the 16th? Is that correct?
December the 16th? No. No, we've got something on next Monday night. Mm-hmm. There's a thing on at the Unitarian Church at 7 o'clock. It's a bit of a function there.
Yep.
And we're going to have Marie Deloria, president's going to do some references to Fidel. We're showing a film, not a Cuban film, but that's at 110 Grey Street, East Melbourne.
We better go.
Yep.
So you're most welcome to attend. You know.
Yep.
Okay.
Thanks
for
that.
Much.